Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Thank you so very much for joining us here today. I'm Eric Peterson. I'm Senior Vice President and Director of the Global Strategy Institute at CSIS, and I'd like to offer you a warm welcome. We're absolutely delighted that you could join us here for this launching of our report entitled Global Water Futures, a Roadmap for Future U.S. Policy. Now, I have a few words to say on that report, but before I do, I would like to defer to Congressman Earl Blumenauer. He, as many of you are acutely aware, is a remarkable force when it comes to broader international water issues as well as foreign assistance. He's a member of the House Ways and Means Committee. He's a leading champion for trade, sustainable international development, and many of us here know him for his very significant efforts with respect to the Paul Simon Water for the Poor Act. Congressman, we're absolutely delighted to have you here with us today. Thank you so very much for breaking away from what is a very busy schedule to join us for this event. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your kind words. I will actually be briefer than normal because I have no voice. For those of us who talk for a living, it's awkward. Better for a lot of people. But I do appreciate what CSIS is doing. The report, the focus, and the follow-up is absolutely critical. Over the course of the last 6 years, a number of us have been working in ways to try and make sure that the United States, when it joined with 185 other countries in making a commitment to at least reduce by half the population of the world that don't have access to safe drinking water and sanitation, have had our ups and downs. One of the ups was actually getting legislation enacted with an interesting bipartisan call. My partners were Senator Frist and Senator Reid, who were then the majority leader and the minority leader in the Senate, where we had in the House Henry Hyde, the Republican chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee, where I served at the time. It was an illustration, I think, in having that bipartisan, multi-generational, and non-ideological approach to this fundamental issue that I found very encouraging. And I continue to find encouraging. I'm frustrated that we're losing the race because despite stated good intentions, and some interesting framework legislation for a variety of reasons that we could talk about, but my voice and your time won't permit today, we haven't kept pace with the requirement. And it's been compounded because of what we've seen with global warming and climate change that's adding to the scarcity and water stress in ways that probably our estimates of up to 3 billion people by 2025 who are going to be in situations of extreme water stress may be understated. It's also frustrating because a lot of what we need to do in a very direct sense is not, as they say, rocket science. Girl Scout troops, Rotary clubs, churches and synagogues have understood what they could do to make a difference. And in terms of, and are actually doing it in many respects around the world, and you'll hear more about that. It's also not, ironically, a funding issue. What are the estimates? Half a takeout pizza per year per family in the United States? There's huge amounts of resources that are being misspent right now. In part, many of the poorest people around the world spend a disproportionate amount of their personal resources, time and money, for an inadequate water supply. If we're able to merge the capacity of the United States and other donor countries, with the proven technology and the advances that are taking place and the revenue stream already in evidence, we can make a huge, huge difference. It's also, I must say, there's more than just water for the poor that's at stake. We'll be offering legislation in the near future to retool the Water for the Poor Act, to strengthen it, to try and take advantage of what we have learned to help the next administration do a better job in the administration of the bill itself. But I truly, as you watch what's going on around here, there are elections and occasionally partisan differences. You may have missed this, if those of you who are working in real life in other areas. But one of the things that comes across is that our ability to focus on providing safe drinking water and sanitation, to prevent the loss. I mean, in the course of this session, there will be 500 children who will die needlessly because of waterborne disease. The ability for us to harness what we know, what we can do, making it better, I think is not just going to make a difference around the world for those individual families and villages and cities. It's going to go a long way towards stabilizing relationships. It's going to show that people can work together. It's going to add economic strength and deal with conflict resolution. Not just in areas around the globe that are faced with the conflict and the stress. I think here in Capitol Hill, I truly believe with your help, we can refine the legislation, we can focus our attention, we can have the United States be a better partner. But the same sort of simple, bipartisan solving of problems that were embedded in the first bill, and I think still motivate a lot of people if they're able to focus on it, is going to help us solve other little problems that we're dealing with, like war and peace and global warming and the financial meltdown. It's the same sort of skills and focus that are going to be necessary. So what you're doing runs the range of potential to help heal what's going on in villages and families. It's going to make a difference in conflict spots, and it's going to help here on Capitol Hill help all of us do our jobs better. I appreciate the work that's being done. I look forward to the follow-up as we can have, no pun intended, a ripple effect across Capitol Hill, across this town, and in power centers and areas of concern around the globe. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mr. Congressman. It really is that precisely what you've just captured, that notion that we stand at a moment of both opportunity but also a serious challenge with respect to global water issues, that motivated a group of us to come together way back when, in February 2007, I hope you can read this in the back, to think through about the broader challenge that water is to international policy. Over that period of time, a wide number of organizations, extremely diverse, individuals with contrasting, sometimes conflicting points of view on a range of issues involving water, got together time and time and time again at CSIS to think through some of these broader issues on how the U.S. might go forward. Our mandate, as this slide suggests, was to think about how we might develop a broader, what we called a full-spectrum vision of what water means to U.S. interests. Not only the well-identified issues with respect to economic development, poverty alleviation, environmental issues, as significant as they are across the board, as the Congressman said, but also to look more generally at what it means to stability and security in one critical geopolitical theater across the world after the next. So with that, we developed a sense of community across a number of organizations. Did we agree on every single point? Absolutely not. But what we tried to do was to look for points of common ground that we could use to define a new roadmap forward into thinking about what the U.S. Canada should be doing. The co-author of this report, Rachel, will you stand up, please? Rachel Posner and I tried very hard to work through the very significant perspectives, but we have to say that despite our sincerest gratitude to all who were involved in this report, some of whom are up here and you'll be hearing from shortly, some of whom are in the audience, in the end, we bear the responsibility for whatever comments are made. But we are deeply grateful to those who were involved for your insight over this process. Now, what are the key issues here? Well, I wanted to raise two significant variables that emerged over the course of our deliberations that, in effect, changed the rules of the game. Thanks to individuals like Congressman Blumenauer, we had the passage of the Water for the Poor Act. That was a very significant issue, which clearly changed our point of reference, our point of departure as we look forward. And the other big issue was the effect, and he mentioned this also, the effect of external variables, everything from global warming to looking at very significant price hikes in agriculture and the dislocation that they've generated right across the world, to the fundamental energy challenges that have been on display of late. All of these critical resource locations or dislocations need to be taken into account as we think about where and how to deal with this critical resource. Now, I'd like to argue here that you and I have, as we look to the future, several cases for an expanded, integrated U.S. policy. Very significant rationale for a number of critical reasons, all of which converge for us to be thinking in new terms about where U.S. international water policy is going. Well, we can begin with the human health case. The Congressman made reference to the number of children that we lose each hour here. The aggregate figures are still more daunting. We're looking at something on the order of 886 million people without access to the water that we consider to be available whenever and however we want it. 2.5 billion people don't have access to what we would consider to be appropriate sanitation. That in itself is a critical case, but there are several other dimensions that can be made here. On top of the human health case, there's the humanitarian case. The fact of the matter is, we look at broader economic development challenges across the world enshrined in the Millennium Development Goals, among other things. We have a powerful rationale for looking at the role of water in terms of developing where things are going in terms of the respective trajectories of economies across the world. Now, a key point here that is too often overlooked is the gender equality case. The fact of the matter is that the effects of these water dislocations are felt disproportionately by women and girls across the world. This is also a critical dimension as we think about broader economic development. Now, add to that the economic development case more generally. We know that access to fresh water and sanitation removes massive barriers to broader economic development. The World Bank, for example, has developed an S-curve with an inflection point at the middle. And below that inflection point, water represents a net draw from society, from economics, and above, water represents a positive input. And the fact of the matter is, even now, in year 2008, too many countries are below that critical inflection point as we look at the spectrum. The environmental case is very clear. The Congressman mentioned the connection between water and global warming. The IPCC has just come out with a new significant report on the connection between global warming and water. It can be found on their website very easily. That, I think, is emblematic of the kind of tremendous complexities that we're going to be seeing in the future across this water resource conundrum that confronts us. And finally, as I suggested earlier, the geopolitical case. The fact of the matter is that in one key theater after the next across the world, many of which have critical U.S. interest engaged, we need to be thinking about water as a seminal factor as we look forward. put it all together, and I would argue that we have in front of us a spectrum of interests, national interests, running the gamut of our international engagement here with water as a critical factor in which we can and should be moving. Now, as we think about the future, I would argue that we have a tremendous opportunity now in terms of thinking where this roadmap can take us. At once, we can pursue national interests, exercise international leadership, address traditional poverty and economic development challenges, promote environmental stewardship, advance the commercial interests of U.S. companies, especially in technology, and limit the geopolitical risks that are on display in key areas of the world. This can be a win-win-win-win-again proposition if we get it right. Now, in our report, Rachel and I, on the basis of the very solid guidance from our colleagues here, have offered 8 areas where we think it would be useful to go forward. The first recommendation is to expand the institutional base of government. Now, a number of people are thinking about redefining broader issues involving foreign assistance in whatever administration appears here in January. That is a wise investment of time, I believe. But whatever comes across, we need to make sure that water is embedded in whatever structure does emerge as a key factor going forward. In the current format, we talk in our report about adding a fourth bureau to the Office of the Undersecretary of Democracy and Global Affairs of the State Department. That could be a point of departure, but clearly there are issues involving how and where these organizational structures evolve that we need to be very agile in addressing. But whatever it is, we need for this office to do a few key things. The 3 critical functions, we believe, are strategic planning and coordination, broader mobilization of resources, policy research and information dissemination. And in particular, we think about fortified outreach with Congress in the way that the congressman just suggested. Number 2, the second recommendation here, is in the area of what kind of an icon we find to develop this water voice that we need so badly. And here, we think that it would be appropriate to head the new office or bureau wherever and however it manifests itself, to have an individual who, with ambassador rank, who is double-hatted, who can navigate across agencies of government, but in particular between the Department of State and USAID, but in all the other ones as well. In the end, we need, forgive the pun, ladies and gentlemen, a fluid negotiator who can bring together diverse interests across these agencies. Number 3, our view is that in the end, we need much more by way of financial resources to make this all happen. In the end, we need a historic commitment on the order that we've seen in this administration under PEPFAR as we think about dealing with what we surely can stipulate is a critical resource challenge of the future. Number 4 is that there is a big use, in our view, of establishing a water policy advisory committee, a series of individuals on both sides of the political aisle, well-respected, certainly well-distinguished in their fields, who will be able to help amplify the voice that is water going forward and will be able to advise whatever ambassador is put into place to deal with the broader issue of water. We've seen a model here, and here at CSIS, I have to admit, we have a connection close to home. The president of CSIS, John Henry, the former Deputy Secretary of Defense, is now chairing the Defense Policy Board of the State Department. And what that does bring very interesting, diverse input to the Secretary of Defense on a regular basis. We think it would be useful to use a similar model when it comes to water in whatever perch it ultimately has. Add to that another linkage with the broader private sector, that is not only corporations but NGOs doing the fantastic work that you'll be hearing about in a little bit. The bottom line here is that there are a couple models here, the USAID Global Development Alliance, the GDA, may be a useful model for us to look at, but what we need is some kind of an institutional way to connect whatever fortified institution emerges with a broader private sector community. Number 6, we need a standing fund. We need to think in terms of more significant agility to deal not only with the longer range challenges that we face, but also to deal with the very significant short-term permutations, the reminders of which we're getting these days, day by day. Number 7, is work at the public policy and grassroots level to achieve the most significant policy appreciation for the issue of water. It's not only an issue of working in these halls or in the administration writ large, but in the end we have to sell this with other funders internationally as well as folks within the U.S., the broader community that can and should be even more cohesive than it is today in pursuit of this broader water agenda. And finally, number eight is to build a coalition based on partisanship that marked passage of the Water for the Poor Act, a critical factor going forward. We saw it, as the Congressman mentioned, both in the Senate and in the House. And that, I think, is an inspiration for the kind of future bipartisanship that will be required to make this kind of a roadmap happen. So in the end, the bottom line here is to strengthen our emphasis across the policy spectrum now on the broader issue of water. It is so fundamental to U.S. interests that we can expect a response nothing short. We need to expand and formalize strategy development, increase coordination across agencies, mobilize all of us in private life who are trying to make some small contribution, take into account the resource dislocations, and to think about a much more significant investment, increasing funding and personnel, and finally, we need to build a widening network in order to make it all happen. So that's no small agenda, but we're convinced that it can and should be done, that this is a remarkable opportunity to go forward. And I know that Rachel and I would like to thank again all of the individuals who have been engaged in this now, 18-month process to bring this report to fruition. Five of whom are sitting in front of you now, and they've all agreed to say a few comments. We had a terrible dilemma in terms of defining a batting order for these individuals, and they're all so important in their own ways. So we finally decided to retreat to alphabetical order. So in that spirit, I'd like to begin with Sally Grooms Cole, who's Chief Liaison Officer and Senior Vice President, PSI. What each person is going to be doing is making a few comments, and then we'll open it up to broader conversation and questions and answers after that. So, Sally, with that brief introduction, thank you so much. Would you folks come up to the podium? I know it'll be a little tight.
Thank you very much. I'm so glad I got married and changed my name, so I moved up in the alphabetical order. But no, seriously, I'm very pleased to be with the colleagues whom I've been seeing around the table many mornings at CSIS over the last 18 months as we, from very diverse viewpoints, talked about this enormous challenge that we face. And there hasn't always been unanimity, and I really want to congratulate Eric and Rachel for pulling these many strands together. There were, I think we didn't all make all meetings, and so there were, I certainly think that the whole is much greater than the sum of its parts, and you really did a masterful job, and I think it sets the stage very well for the important issues that are facing us as we go forward. This week, the Secretary General is convening meetings with world leaders in New York, marking the halfway point in the stage of the Millennium Development Goals, and certainly in terms of drinking water and sanitation, we're in most places not yet halfway there. So there is an enormous challenge. The CSIS report is very broad, and it talks to about the, as Eric has already done, and I certainly won't repeat that, but the larger issues of industry and of agriculture and global populations and climate change. And of course all of these are important, but our particular critical theme for an organization like mine, PSI, is the safe drinking water issue. And the Congressman mentioned and Eric mentioned that a billion people worldwide lack access. The Millennium Development Goals are only trying to get half of those million access. And really, those are people who have access to an improved source, but an improved source doesn't always lead to actual safe drinking water. It just means somebody's done something to the source. And because a lot of the water that's being drunk out there is still unsafe, 2 million children are dying each year, about 5,000 a day. So, you know, imagine 31 jetliners crashing every day full of the world's children. And that's the drinking water issue. And we've heard a lot in the last years about malaria and HIV and AIDS and TB, and we've heard much less about diarrhea, which is actually a bigger killer of children than all of these other things. So the problem is enormous, and the range of solutions are enormous, and we're fulfilling one small part of that, working in 29 countries with a number of partners, some of whom are in this room, to provide household water treatments to make sure that the water that people drink is actually safe when they drink it. And we do this through some of the principles which have been outlined here, working in with the private sector, the local private sector in countries to get this product out to places where people shop, the global private sector. We have a partnership with Procter & Gamble for their revolutionary treatment, which is called Pure. And Pure not only disinfects water, but it flocculates water so that the 30% of the people who are actually getting their drinking water directly from a river or a stream are always dealing with the fact that there's sand and all kinds of other material in it. All of these things are so unbelievably cheap. The congressman mentioned the pizza budget, but really from the most basic household water treatment, which is a chlorine drop, to the sort of Cadillac of treatments, which is Pure, the range to get a whole family drinking water would range between $3 and $30 a year. So that's an unbelievably little price tag for an effect which not only is an effect on health, but also an effect on our larger development programs. We're very pleased and congratulate the Congress for passing the Paul Simon Water for the Poor Act. It has $300 million in funding. There's a proposal that next year that be increased to $500 million. That would certainly support full implementation and bring sanitation and hygiene to about 10 million people. So you've seen a framework here. There are a lot of issues that still need to be dealt with. We're awfully pleased to be invited to present a little bit about our work, and I look forward to hearing from the other organizations. Thank you.
Now it's my pleasure to introduce Jeff DiBalco, who is director of the Environmental Change and Security Program at Woodrow Wilson. Jeff, like many other individuals here, is a ricocheting bullet. We're absolutely delighted to catch him in Washington at this time. He's en route for New York for reasons that perhaps he'll tell you about. But Jeff, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Well, good morning, everyone. I certainly will not take a backseat to Eric Peterson's travel schedule in any way, shape, or form. But good morning. It's a great pleasure and really a privilege to be up here because, as Eric has pointed out, so many of you in the audience could be doing exactly the same thing, and there are a terrific number of expertise and really partners, as Eric's pointed out, in this process. It was delightful to work with Eric and Rachel on this. Life is kind of too short to work with people who aren't both serious and who it's enjoyable to work with. And they both fit in that category, as well as the many colleagues and friends who came together in what I think is producing a valuable report, but also a valuable process. A process that increases the value and the quality of the report, but also does what the congressman urged us to all do, which is follow up. And so it's terrific to be a small part of that. I do think this report is a significant and key step in making this progress. I think it is part of generating the energy that we have seen and are seeing increasingly, the collaboration, finding more political will, and finding the ideas that really are critical for addressing the myriad of challenges. As Sally pointed out, the report is very strong, and this group has really had a strong focus on safe drinking water and sanitation. I think that's a key priority. I think what is also a real value of this report is it doesn't just stop there. It really, as Eric's comments pointed out, takes in the additional key priorities that really range the gamut from energy, food, industry, ecosystem services, livelihood and poverty, transportation and trade, you don't necessarily get that in, to the discussion as much, but as you'll hear, I have a thing for the transboundary, and if we're talking about rivers, then this is a big part of why countries care about it, communities care about it, and people care about it. And so we need to, as this report does, keep these issues on the agenda as we find ways to move forward on this. So in that vein, let me focus for just a moment on transboundary. I think progress on finding ways to make progress on transboundary cooperation is critical to achieving some of the large-scale changes that we want. Because in many ways, and we had this discussion in some of the meetings, we need to add a whole lot of zeros to the totals that we're talking about. We need to add a whole lot of people to the list of folks benefiting from this. And that includes and focuses on drinking water and sanitation, but needs to go broader. So in a world that has 263 rivers that are shared by two or more countries, it's both critical to prevent the conflict that we have and will likely see more of, but also realize the opportunities that this interdependence presents and gain some of the benefits from cooperating around that. Now, right now, from where I sit, the government, our government, has and its resources are really not well structured and set up to realize these transboundary gains. I mean, in many ways, what we have come to work in is largely a bilateral set of institutions working in a multilateral or transboundary world. And to me, part of what is constructive about this report and hopefully will be the focus of follow-on discussions as part of the kind of multi-pronged approach on these water issues is finding ways to strengthen the hand of those who are working in this area, increase the resources that they have, those who particularly also are pursuing regional approaches, and that's within the government, that's within the private sector, that's within funding recipients, NGO partners, and such. Because I believe that is needs to be part of the package. And what I think is a tribute to this group is that there was room for these different aspects and these different focus areas of the real water challenge that we face in the water crisis that's identified, and I look forward to working with Eric and colleagues and following up on this agenda. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now it gives me pleasure to introduce Jeanette Hemley. We've had the opportunity over this process to work with a number of colleagues from the World Wildlife Fund, and she is Senior Vice President for Conservation Strategy and Science there. We're absolutely delighted that you've agreed to join us here today.
Thank you very much, Eric, and thanks to all of you for being here, and to the panelists for allowing me to be part of this important event. We really welcome this report, which has truly been a collaboration of enormous extent. It's about an agenda that we fully subscribe to at World Wildlife Fund in conservation terms. The bottom line need to elevate water on national, international agendas. And my own organization at WWF, we've embarked upon an effort to really elevate water in environmental and conservation terms in recent years. We would wholly concur that we are not only facing a major global water challenge, but we are on the verge of a global water crisis. The next decade is really going to be a crucial one to address the range of issues that are so well cited in the report and that some of the panelists have already touched upon. It's said in the report that water is the next oil. It may well be the next carbon, if you want to put it that way. It's probably the most strategically important but undervalued natural resource we have today on this planet. WWF is the world's largest conservation organization. We've been working for over 30 years on freshwater conservation efforts at both the field level with partners to conserve freshwater biological diversity, and that's diversity upon which all of life depends. But we've also been working at the macro level to address national, international policies to really help enable sustainable river basin management, including cross-boundary areas, which are so important, as you've just heard. Water is at the heart of many of the field-based efforts that we do in conservation in places like Nepal and India, where we've partnered with companies like Johnson & Johnson to really help improve sanitation for communities that are living in important biological areas. Coastal East Africa, we partner with CARE, ministries of health in several countries to really improve access to drinking water. And in Indochina, in the Mekong Basin, we've been working at the policy level regionally with the Asian Development Bank to really help develop guidelines that will improve the resistance to floods in that large floodplain for future road structures. So crossing the gamut of issues and levels of work, this is a core part of the global conservation agenda. We strongly agree with the assessment and delighted to see the very articulate synthesis put together in the CSIS report on really integrating mainstreaming water interests into our foreign policy agenda and into all of our foreign assistance efforts. You've heard and you can read about all the statistics. I won't go into them about the importance of the scope of people that lack access to sanitation and drinking water, the relationship, of course, to health and disease. From a conservation perspective, freshwater species and ecosystems are among the most endangered on Earth. We estimate that half of all freshwater species have gone extinct since 1970. That's a huge and rapid change. 50% of the world's wetlands were lost in the last century. So rapid conversion of habitat, those are some of the underpinnings of the natural system as a whole. World Wildlife had recently completed with the Nature Conservancy and a team of about 200 scientists the first ever global assessment of freshwater biological resources, which we hope will help add to the great body of work that's been provided through the CSIS report to really helping us understand where the most important biological areas are, things like freshwater fisheries that are important protein sources for people around the world. Large areas of some of our greatest river basins, the Amazon, the Ganges, the Yangtze, had outstanding biological resources increasingly stressed by pollution, population growth, withdrawals of water, and general overuse. As I just mentioned, water provides ecosystem services that probably run the billions, if not trillions, of dollars in value. A resource that is not economically valued to the extent that it should be. This is an issue that needs to be incorporated into a broad strategy that is touched upon in the report and something that we're committed to working on as well. It's been discussed, and by touching on some of the previous panelists, the fact that water is such a cross-cutting issue, and that is one reason it's been so hard for the government to get its hands around. 15 government agencies have a piece of the water agenda, but we need the commitment at the highest levels of Congress and the administration to really address that. Tapping into the considerable expertise that exists in the government, for example, the U.S. Geological Survey, probably the best scientific knowledge base in the world on hydrology. We need to share that, bring it to the fore, and share it with other countries to help us predict where the next water crises are going to occur. We have the tools. We need to share them. We need to help ourselves and other countries prepare for the next water crises, and that's not happening to the extent that it could be a huge opportunity there. Partnerships are key. As I cited in our own experience, that is the only way we're going to address these issues. Some suggestions have been made in the report through looking at different approaches through, like the Global Development Alliance at USAID, developing and establishing a Water Advisory Council to bring together partners. Critical because of the cross-boundary nature of waters, with over 260 major rivers actually crossing boundaries, and so it has to be a multilateral effort in many cases. Let me just mention two quick issues in closing on the environmental front that are important. You've already heard about the huge impact that we're only beginning to understand of climate change, the likely impact. The IPCC has just come out with a major report that begins to outline the parameters of that part of the issue. We have a lot of work to do there, but I think there's little question that that's only going to add to the stresses and is an area that we will need to wholly embrace as part of a national strategy. The final issue I just want to touch on is around the issue of the water and agriculture nexus. Agriculture uses over 70% of all water available to people. It's a huge part, the biggest driver of water use in the world. We need to work with the private sector, with companies that are helping that are the pressures behind a lot of the withdrawals, to really look for collaborations on improving water standard use and getting us on a better sustainable footing. We're working in one example that I'll just share as I close with Coca-Cola to help conserve, provide on-the-ground conservation efforts in parts of the world such as the Yangtze, the Mekong, the Rio Grande, Rio Bravo rivers of southwestern United States and Mexico to really help, and also to help Coca-Cola address its own uses of water conservation efforts by supporting their development of tools to increase efficiency in water use, beginning with some of the commodities that they use in their products, like sugar, which is a thirsty crop, helping them figure out how better to do that more efficiently and to have less impact on the biological systems that their water use is affecting. And so this kind of multifaceted partnership, looking at both water use and conservation in the field, is a big part of the picture that we see as important going forward. We look forward to working with CSIS and the panelists here and others in this room to really helping elevate this issue and addressing this crucial issue in the years to come, because we don't have a lot of time to address it. Thank you.
Jeanette, thank you very much for those comments. I'd like to acknowledge, too, we've worked with your colleagues. Jessica McGlynn, where are you? Hi, thank you for your help. And then a one-of-a-kind Gordon Binder has been a wonderful friend to this effort from the very beginning. Now, it gives me deep pleasure yet again to introduce Tanvi Nagpal, who has remarkable experience in broader international development issues in the World Bank context, among others. She's now Director of Water and Sanitation Initiatives at the Global Water Challenge. She's also been a delight to have at our meetings. We're also delighted to have you here.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much, Eric. Thank you, Rachel. I'm glad that I got back from New York to do this. Definitely. So Global Water Challenge is a relatively young coalition of 22 very seasoned members, corporate, academics, non-governmental implementers, and every single one of them, however different they are all committed to a common goal of universal access to clean water, safe sanitation, and hygiene. Universal access, nothing short of universal access. No halving the number of people with access, no reducing this percentage, universal access. And we agree that the magnitude of the problem, which is already a big problem, is now worsened by the urgency with which it must be confronted. And the CSIS report does a remarkable job of pointing that out to us, by saying very clearly that by 2030, 3.9 billion people are going to be living in water-stressed countries. It points to the fact that those 3.9 billion people who will then live in water-stressed countries are also often the poorest people in the world. These people are also the same people who currently lack access to safe drinking water and sanitation. We have to do something now. We can't wait to 2015, and we can't wait to 2030, when those poor people will not only be living in water-stressed countries, but also living in regions of violence, driven to violence because of those water stresses. So this is not just an issue of human security, it's an issue of national security, and it's an issue of incredible urgency, and therefore it's immensely gratifying that an organization like CSIS intervenes in an issue which was essentially considered an issue of health until now. You know, converting that issue of health into an issue of national security is really, really important, and there aren't many agencies around the country that can do that as well as you can. So we're really delighted to be part of this report. I just want to stress on two things, and I'm going to really talk only about the solutions here and not so much about the problem, because you've already talked about that. There's three main ways in which at GWC we look at dealing with the water crisis. And the sanitation crisis. One is you've got to increase the amounts of funds that are available. And that's very clear, and you've made a very good case for why you need to increase those funds. So both the United States government, but also governments all over the world, have to increase the total amount of money that they need to put in for safe water access and for sanitation. The actual total amounts of money going into water and sanitation have been falling in the last 10 years, not increasing. The second thing is to increase the sustainability of the investments that are actually made in water and sanitation. And I want to stress that that's really important because in many of the places where we work, it's not that they've never had an investment in water and sanitation, it's that the investment in water and sanitation that has been made has not lasted as long as it should have. So it's not that there's never been a well dug, it's not that there's never been a drain provided, it's not that there's never been a health program, it's that they just have not worked for as long as they should have. They should have worked in perpetuity. And we need to find ways to increase the sustainability of those interventions. The third thing that we need to do is to bring costs down. Currently, in the water and sanitation field, there is absolutely no consensus on how much anything should cost, how much anything reasonable should cost. In the health field, there have been great advances made in how much the delivery of a particular vaccination should cost, how much it should cost to give antiretrovirals to people. But in the health and sanitation field, there is absolutely no consensus. So those are the three things that we think about in terms of increasing actual access, increasing funds, improving sustainability, reducing costs. How do we think we're going to go about doing this? And at GWC, we have a very simple, GWC stands for Global Water Challenge, which is something that's used in a very different context in, the adverb noun thing happening throughout the report, but we are the proper noun, Global Water Challenge. So the three things that we do, we call it our mantra. It's called learn, connect, and invest. So we need to learn. We need to learn how to increase that sustainability. We need to connect resources. We need to make sure that those small, incredibly sustainable, really brilliant NGO initiatives can be connected and scaled. So we need to bring the kinds of resources to bear on the problem that the problem deserves. We call it honoring the scale of the problem. We intend to honor the scale of the problem. And the third thing that we need to do is to invest, which is essentially to bring those resources to bear. Learning, connecting, and investing requires the kinds of partnerships that GWC stands for and the kinds of partnerships that CSIS has recommended in the creation of its Water Advisory Board. It just essentially means that neither governments nor corporations nor NGOs are really up to the task by themselves. And they need to partner. Partnerships are cumbersome, partnerships are tricky, partnerships are often hard, but they're absolutely essential in this sector because each of those partners knows something different about the problem. The corporates know something about supply chain management that neither governments nor NGOs know about. The NGOs know something about communities that corporates and governments don't know about. And governments know something about scaling up good programs that neither corporates nor communities can do on their own. So getting these three parties together and just remembering those issues of sustainability, of scale, of replication, of learning how to do this, of investing in the right programs, of replicating the right programs is where we need to go. And we think that the recommendations that are made in this report are exactly right on target. And we hope that the follow-on will really help us to gel and to put together the kind of partnerships that we need with the United States government and the water and hygiene sector to make the universal access goal a reality. Thank you so much.
Sophie, thank you very much. And now I'd like to make the microphone available to Mark Winter, who combines a background in business and diplomacy and government. The list goes on and on. For our purposes, he's also a member of the Millennium Water Alliance, a group of non-governmental organizations with experience and expertise. Mark is very well known in these halls. Delighted to have you here with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Going to have to change my name. I don't know what's left. Winter, W, etc. First and foremost, on behalf of the water bugs of the world, I think we should salute and congratulate the efforts of both Rachel and Eric for producing this product. So we thank you very much. I'm going to try to share with you a 30,000.
water situation. I am one of those water bugs. 12 years ago, I received a call from a business colleague of mine saying, Mark, I'm going to take you on a vision tour to Africa. The last place I wanted to go was Africa. 3 calls later, I'm on a plane to Nairobi. It was a life-changing experience. I'm sure you have shared those experiences yourself. I had a chance to visit the poorest of the poor. Had a chance to visit a number of hospitals that had no clean, safe water. Orphanages, the same. Schools. We talked about education, but it's very difficult to learn when your brain isn't fully engaged. Clean water to accomplish. Subsequent trips to Africa, I had a chance to visit with a number of NGOs, experts in the field, providing water services here, there, and everywhere. Some from my business background and colleagues that had a business background, we felt that perhaps that wasn't the most efficient or transparent way to deliver this service. What we did is that we organized, I see Dennis Warner there, who's a member of the Women's Airlines Catholic Police Service. We organized some of the larger NGOs that had either a water mission or a water expertise. And with this organization, we formed the Bloody Water Alliance, for our attention. Through this alliance, feel that we have created certain efficiencies now, and they have become more transparent. And we're pretty well known, not only these halls, but the donor groups, because of the expertise we bring to the table. So the alliance, in many respects, has been the first step towards facilitating the process. I just want to go into a couple of the recommendations and how they kind of dovetail with what we have done with this NGO community that has become members of the Millennium Water Alliance. Eric mentioned first there's a need for a new bureau, a Bureau for International Water Policy. And the MWA supports that concept. And this isn't a new idea. Just think through some of the issues that this focus administration and this city have faced and what they have done in response to those issues. PEPFAR, when you think of HIV/AIDS, you kind of have a one-stop shop, the PEPFAR, and articulate a proposal, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, I should note that when Earl Blumenauer was here, he is responsible for including water as part now of the appropriations process for PEPFAR. In other words, certain monies can be used for water in helping cure the pandemic of HIV/AIDS. In addition, you have the Millennium Challenge Corporation, an independent government agency that rewards countries that have passed certain earmarks or clear certain hurdles on there as they march towards democracy. And in fact, many of the what they call compacts of the MCC have incorporated a water subset. A couple of weeks ago, MCC had a program devoted to water, MCC's commitment to clean water, sanitation, and improved water structure. So they have also embrace the need for clean water. But I think the most exciting thing, and I'm a person, as Dennis knows, that's on a half cup. The water's half full in my water cup. And I get very enthused when I talk about providing the water needs to the needy of the world. When you take a view, we go back over the last 5 years, I see a lot of young faces out there. Water hasn't always been the center place, or even on the radar screen for a number of years. It is now, and principally due to to the passage of the Paul Simon Water for the Poor Act back in 2005. This set the framework for a water initiative, a global water initiative, that really would provide water as a basic tenet of our foreign policy. Personally, I think the best use of our foreign aid dollars is to bring clean, safe water to the needs of the world. We now have this outline, this framework. But as you know, that good-looking Paul Simon Water for the Poor Card needs some fuel. And over the last couple of years, the appropriators have come and provided that gasoline to get that engine started. A couple of years ago, it was $200 million. Last year, it was $300 million. And a portion of that $300 million is dedicated to be used in Africa. So I think it's a very wise and sound move. So in addition to the funding, in addition to the framework, you also have CSIS rolling out this roadmap, something that we need. Here to a course, an organization, to this new bureau, hopefully that will be founded and funded, to bring forward water as one of the centerpieces of our foreign policy. Also, I agree with the recommendation that we need someone of ambassadorial rank to head up this bureau, almost a cabinet-level type position. We have an individual that can report directly to the Secretary of State, the Administrator of USAID. In other words, to make a very complex set of programs, somebody mentioned 17, 18 different agencies are involved now, into that type of PEPFAR mentality where you go to one place to secure your water needs. In addition, I think it's wise to embrace a water advisory council. In other words, we can go beyond the government sector and we include the NGOs, and we include the academic community, the scientific community. It enhances your positions in that you do absorb their thought process. And as we found that out through the Morning Water Alliance, there are many of our groups from the CARES and the World Vision, the Catholic Relief Service, they're experts, and they have a certain way of doing things. And when you talk these things through, it's so beneficial at the end of the day to have that knowledge as part of the process. So I just want to thank you, Eric. When you read the report, one of the first things it said is that today we're facing a water challenge, and tomorrow this could become a water crisis. It's incumbent upon us to address the issue here and now. Just remember, when you go back to your respective offices and I see staff and congressmen's offices, please let your bosses know that water is the liquid of life, and water is a currency.
Ladies and gentlemen, will you help me thank this distinguished group of speakers for their contribution? Congressman Blumenauer talked about a ripple effect, and I would like to offer on the part of CSIS three initial ripples, of which no doubt there are many others that will be happening in the organizations represented in this room. The first of these ripples is I'm happy to announce this morning the development of a high-level policy board at CSIS that will be co-chaired by former Senator Bill Frist and former Coca-Cola Chairman and CEO Neville Isdell. They will be putting together a senior policy group that will issue a set of a declaration, draft principles on how we should go forward. We hope, armed with some of the points that we put out in this report. The second is that we'll be working with friends in government at their request, of course,
in the lead-up to the Fifth World Water Forum in Istanbul in March. That would be a critical early threshold for the next administration. My guess is that they will need all the help that they can get, and my guess is that many of us would be more than willing to help them in whatever way might be possible. And finally, number three, is that as we go forward, and many of these thoughtful comments that were offered here today stress the linkages between food, water, and energy, and then took into account the demographic logic, the relentless demographic increases that we have on the horizon on the one hand, and global warming issues and other environmental degradation pressures long range, the whole issue of sustainability and conservation on the other. We would like to put together a broad modeling project looking at the linkages between food, water, and energy. We've already had a couple scoping meetings at CSIS. We'll be looking to involve a number of you in this effort, assuming we can bring it all to fruition. But we will be working very hard to make a contribution in that regard. So it's amazing when how time flies when you have good people covering good issues. I think we're already over our allotted hour. Is that right, Rachel? Well, Rachel Posner, I'd like to thank you again very much for your key role on this effort. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so very much for taking part.